This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning and welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George, waiting for our guest, Dr. Valit, to call in at this point. So let's just talk a little bit about Obamacare and the state of affairs at this point. There's been a lot of, I think, misinformation about what's going on with the numbers. And we've heard numbers quoted 7 million, now 8 million people that have signed up for Obamacare. And I think people need to understand that it's not the numbers that have signed up. Technically, it's the number of people that have paid and actually have health insurance. And that number is nowhere near 8 million. I mean, the studies have shown almost about 300,000 people have actually, new insured people have joined the rolls of the Obamacare system. So that pales in comparison to the 8 million that's being quoted. And most of those people who are newly enrolled actually had health insurance but were kicked off of their plan. Now, we need to really discuss the fact that this is a very small percentage of the population, over 300 million plus people in this country, and only 8 million technically have signed up. I don't consider that a win. I think that's a joke. But the fact that that small percentage has disrupted the entire system is really, it's devastating. People who, 5 million at this point, who had insurance they were happy with, who could afford the insurance that they were using, have lost it. And now they're in a system where it's costing them more, where they've lost their doctor that they were happy with. Some people were actually in treatment and under the care of a doctor with catastrophic illnesses such as cancer, who now, in some instances, have lost their ability to be treated. So it's, for some, technically a death sentence. If it happened to one person, in my opinion, that is unacceptable. And anybody who's spiking the football and doing a dance in the end zone about winning under Obamacare has some blood on their hands. And this is a ghoulish system. And it's kind of frightening that the people who are proponents of this bill, this now law, who demonized people for not caring about the poor and wanting people to die, are actually doing dancing on people's graves because they won, but they're not willing to admit that this system is all about rationing, all about denial of care, all about deciding the fate and the winners and the losers. And it doesn't seem to matter to them all of a sudden. It's actually pretty frightening. And hopefully when Dr. Valet comes on, she's going to tell us more about Medicare, because the proponents of this system were all about Medicare for all and how it would be a better system if people were allowed to all join Medicare. And once we break down what Medicare is really all about, I think people are going to be well educated on the fact that entering the Medicare system is probably one of the most, I don't even know how to describe it. It's a gulag. I think that's the best way to describe it. It's prison. It's holding your health care hostage and having the government be the gatekeeper. And it's only getting worse. You know, I think when it first started, it was designed it was told to us that it was designed to be health care for seniors. And it was a socialized system where you pay into a pot. And once you work your years and earn your reward of retirement, you have this pot of money that's saved for you that will potentially be used for whatever you need it to be used for, healthcare-wise. And maybe it started off like that. And I find parallels to Obamacare in this instance, that it was prepaying for your healthcare with the mindset that you would trust that it would be there when you got there, when you needed it. And they raided the lockbox for it. They kept the money, they use it for other things, and they put IOUs in this system. So they basically, it's like the banking system in a sense. I mean, I see parallels all over the place. The banking system takes your money, holds it for you, supposedly saves it and doesn't use it, or, you know, somehow safeguards it so when you need it, it's ready for you to remove from the system. And it's been used for other things. It's been leveraged, multiple times, you know, dozens of times, and now that you need your money back, it's not there, and the value of it is dropped. Well, this is not a bank, this is healthcare. And so the value of your healthcare technically has dropped. This is what people I don't think have seen yet. And it's been a long process. It's been inched in, you know, over time. And I had a conversation last night on an interview where I talked about how do we get here? You know, 15, 20 years ago, doctors saw their patients before the insurance companies encroached in the system. The doctor and the patient decided what needed to be done. The patients paid fee-for-service for office visits, and the insurance was used for big-ticket items. When that system was in place, it actually worked. The cost of seeing a doctor, the cost of doing things in the office were pretty much flat. There was really no inflation of these bills. Doctors had enough money, enough reimbursement to actually spend time with their patients, and they were able to do what they trained to do. And so we had a doctor-patient relationship that was paramount. Over time, that changed. When the insurance company started to take over the first dollar of healthcare, everything from aspirin to seeing your doctor with copays, this thing started to change. And patients were lulled into the feeling that I'm getting something for nothing. I may be paying a premium, but I basically have nothing out of pocket when I come to the doctor. And so it's a free-for-all. I'm going to come as much as I want. They didn't see the cost of healthcare. So it basically got their choices got taken away from them. Initially, they didn't see it. Now it's being, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost, where that cost has been inflated because there's such a bureaucracy, a huge bureaucracy that feeds off of the healthcare system. The insurance company is all about making money. It's not about providing you health. And their job is to collect the premium and not pay out. That's how they make their money. That's how they keep their board of directors and their shareholders happy. That's great for them. But what it means for us now is that they've become a parasite that is sucking the blood out of the healthcare system. And now it's becoming obvious to patients and doctors, I hope, that the system is not—it's not designed to really work in our favor. It's designed to, you know, suck the life force out of us. And now we're in the position where we're mind controlled to think that it's, if we give them more money, if we give the insurance companies and now the government more power, that they're going to reverse this and take care of us. That's not going to happen. What they're going to do is continue to take. As long as we allow them to take it, they will continue to do so. And ultimately, the quality of healthcare, which is now hidden in the capitated system where there's extender providers in there. Initially, they were really doing what they were designed to do, which was to be an adjunct to the doctor-patient relationship, help the doctor perform, you know, be more efficient, see more patients, but still have the forefront or be the forefront of the healthcare delivery system. That's gone by the wayside too. So we're paying a premium, higher premium in terms of patient satisfaction, in terms of outcome, in terms of cost of healthcare, and in terms of the ability to deliver the system in a cost-effective manner. It's not. So at this point, the people who are providing the healthcare are designed to be the ones that know the least, will go along and get along, will follow government-driven and pharmaceutical-driven mandates on what constitutes delivery. So we've talked about this before. If you have sinusitis or you have a thyroid condition, for example, doctors are no longer deciding, and for the most part, how the treatment goes. It's driven by rigid algorithms designed by pharmaceutical companies, by insurance industry, and by the government, you know, bean counters, how it should be delivered. And that's coming down to what medicines you give, how long it should take for you to get better, whether or not you're going to be allowed to have any intervention, if that's a CT scan, if that's a surgery. And in if we look at the UK system, and I don't mean to jump a little bit, but they're actually being paid to not deliver health care. That's how it works in the UK. So under their Liverpool pathway, the hospitals actually get paid for not providing acute care to their patients, for putting them in hospice, and for giving them basic euthanasia by default, you know, morphine and withhold your IV, withhold your food. That's a death panel. And they get rewarded for that. And under the Obamacare system, this is the truth, and people don't see this. And I suggest that if you have the time, you read this bill. Because under the Obamacare system, hospitals are now being rewarded, especially under Medicare, for denial of care, for not providing acute care, for maybe not putting someone in an ICU, but sending them off to a hospice. This is where the money is being spent. It's not being spent on putting in a pacemaker anymore or doing glaucoma surgery. It's about warehousing people. And the hospitals are all about staying open. Nobody cares about you more than you can. That's the truth. So when you see this system coming online and you have big corporate entities like hospitals, insurance companies, pharmaceutical industry being rewarded for withholding care, delaying care, denying care and pre-certifications, and pocketing the money, you should be up in arms and you should be very concerned that if you don't protect your health, nobody will. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that allergy season in Georgia is year-round? Beginning in July through November, ragweed is the predominant pollen. But February through May, tree pollen causes allergy symptoms. Grass pollen occurs from mid-May through the beginning of July. If you suffer from daily nasal congestion, sneezing, runny nose, headache, ear clogging, or popping, or a chronic cough, these symptoms may be due to allergy and not infection. You should also think of allergies if there is no fever, chills, or colored mucus. Treatment should include nasal salt water sprays over the counter or antihistamines that do not cause drowsiness. If you have persistent headaches, a decrease in your sense of smell, or nosebleeds, you should see an ear, nose, and throat physician. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
Did you miss the show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
Spring is in the air, literally. So follow Sniffles to Atlanta Center for breathing easy. Weeds, spores, grass, pollen. Airborne allergen levels are through the roof, putting your allergies into overdrive. It's time to followsniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
End your annual ritual of taking medication to alleviate facial pressure, facial pain, congestion, and headaches by treating the problem, not the symptom. Balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for. This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day. Followsniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Your severe sinus and nasal symptoms gone once and for all. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again. Call us at 404-591-9100. That's 404-591-9100.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Followsniffles.com.
This is Dr. Elena George with your health tip of the day. Did you know that eating too little and skipping meals can actually cause you to gain weight? When you do not take enough calories in, your body can actually stop you from losing weight. Your body works best when it is adequately fueled. If you fail to eat enough, your metabolism will slow down and your body will become stressed and actually hold on to fat. This will lead to muscle loss instead of fat. Exercise and lightweight training will increase endurance and muscle mass and will boost both your metabolism and your sense of well-being. Eat three well-rounded meals a day containing a lean protein,
fiber and a complex carbohydrate, such as a whole grain, with two snacks, such as fruits or nuts. These will promote healthy weight loss that is long-term. Prior to starting an exercise program, remember to see your doctor if you have any medical problems. Please join me on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. for Medicine on Call. This is Dr. Elena George.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call, and I'm so happy to have Dr. Valit on our show today. Little miscommunication on our part, and I totally apologize, but I was just giving the audience a preview of what you were going to talk about today, and the fact that Obamacare is destroying not only the doctor-patient relationship, but the ability for doctors to actually take care of their patients. And when I go on shows, Dr. Valit, I talk a lot, or people ask me a lot about Medicare, and Medicare recipients are really just in the dark about what their options are. And I learned some really eye-opening things myself about Medicare. And the fact that once you're in the system, you have really very little choice about healthcare delivery. And before I let you answer, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am an independent physician. I resigned from all insurance contracts in 1986 because they were forcing me to make decisions against the best interest of my patients. And I felt that my oath of Hippocrates that I take very seriously said that I was to focus on the best interest of the patient. I didn't take an oath to the government or to the insurance carriers to do what they needed for their profit or for the government cost savings. So fundamentally, I want your listeners to know that I speak as an independent medically and an independent politically, because the key point here that people don't realize is that it's not political whether you like Obamacare or not. When your life is at stake and when you need access to quick medical care targeted to your individual needs, your life is at stake. And it doesn't really matter whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or Moon Party, or an Independent, or Green Party, or whatever. The key is a health insurance card and health insurance policies do not guarantee your medical care when you need it, what you need for your problems. And that is my biggest concern, because under the cutbacks in Medicare, patients' ability to get the care they need when they need it is getting seriously compromised by the budget cuts and by the rule changes. And I'm happy to talk with you more about the specifics of what those are. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I'm really very pleased about is that I was recently recognized for my work for medical freedom with being awarded one of the 2014 Ellis Island Medal of Honor awards coming up in New York in May. And the importance of medical freedom, I think, is missed in all of our discussions about the cost and what's this policy going to cost and what's that policy is going to cost and who pays for what. We really are losing sight of medical freedom as a core value to protect your life and your health. And in some cases, protecting your wealth as well. That's why, because everything's costing more, and you're going to have to pay more out of pocket. And that's why my Twitter name is Health and Sense, because it's your health and your money at stake.
Exactly. I mean, they've conflated the two. I think you're absolutely right. And they've made doctors and patients enemies of each other. They make it sound like we're the
problem. Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I saw that in 1986, and I just said at the time I had enough training in the psychology of medicine that I just said, wait a minute, I'm here to help the patients. I'm not going to have the insurance companies make me the enemy and make the patients angry at me for their decisions. So I just said to the patients, this is your contract with the carrier. I answer only to you. And my thought is that if you are dissatisfied with what they're paying for, you need to write to them. I can't control it.
How did the
and you know, that really helped. It turned the situation around so that the patients began seeing me as their ally against the denier of care rather than the enemy.
That's empowering, and I wish more doctors would do that. But it takes the
ability. I do too, Dr. George. I really am very upset that our profession, as a general observation, sold out patients and to answer to the insurance company. And let's be very clear, the entity, whether it's government or whether it's private insurance, the entity that pays the bills is going to determine the care that you get.
Mm-hmm.
And doctors need to start opting out of Medicare, and that is an option that your listeners need to know. If they want a doctor who will advocate for what the patient needs and is free to order the test and the services and the medications and the procedures that the patient needs, the patients are going to need to seek independent, opted-out physicians, so that the physician will have the freedom to do what's in the patient's best interest.
Now let's tease that apart.
I mean, one of the things that I think is important that many patients do not realize is that other than government-determined copayments, Medicare patients are not legally allowed to pay cash out of pocket for covered services that they need if they see a Medicare contracted physician, but Medicare denies the service. So they can't turn around and say, well, okay, doc, I'm going to pay cash for this, so let me go ahead and get it. You have to have an independent opted-out physician in order to pay cash for the services you need, and by paying cash, you are allowed to opt out of your medical records going to the government database. So I think patients really need a whole lot more education about exactly what are the jeopardies that they face under the new Medicare rules. Do you want to talk about some of those?
I absolutely do, and I want to stop you for 1 second because you mentioned about opt-out. Can you be a little bit more specific for our listeners, because they actually don't know anything about this? So once you turn 65 and you are eligible for Medicare, it's my understanding that becomes your primary insurance. Am I correct?
You are correct, except for one area. If a person over 65 or over is still working for a company that offers health insurance, then they are allowed under federal law to continue on the employer's plan until they retire or cease working.
Okay.
Or the company goes out of business or doesn't offer the health plan. For example, my small business offered health insurance for all of us employees until this year, when Obamacare caused the new rules, caused the insurance company to have to cancel the small business plan that we had, which was a nice one with a health savings account, and the premiums were reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, when you do not have the employer-based insurance any longer, then anyone 65 or over needs to go on Medicare. If they don't sign up for Medicare, they risk losing their ability to access Social Security benefits. So it's a forced situation where the government is forcing seniors into the one option of Medicare once they are no longer working. Now, when I talk about opted out, I'm talking about the legal process by which physicians and health professionals and hospitals are allowed to to legally opt out of being contracted with Medicare so that they can establish private contracts with patients for services on a cash basis, which is not submitted to Medicare but may be submitted to the supplemental policy that most Medicare patients have. Mm-hmm. And that legal opt-out process for physicians and hospitals, for example, the Mayo Clinic out in Glendale, Arizona, is not contracted with Medicare. So Medicare patients who go there will pay cash for the services, but they can get the services they need. They don't have to follow the Medicare denials of services. So that's the advantage. And the legal opt-out process then allows us as physicians to be recognized by Medicare, legally authorized to order tests and procedures and medications for Medicare patients. But we can say to the patient, Medicare isn't going to cover this, but I think you need this test. You think you need this test. You have the option to pay cash if you would like to have this test. And then the patient gets to decide, mm-hmm. rather than being told it's denied and that's that.
Well, you wrote an excellent piece about how Obamacare has actually become more of a gatekeeper against seniors being able to, and doctors, to be able to control patient care. And one of the first things I saw on the piece is that if now Medicare has changed the rules, so if I'm not a Medicare provider and I have opted out, I can't really write a prescription for these patients anymore. Is that correct?
No, actually, that's the one protection for patients under the legal opt-out process, is that legally opted out independent physicians can still order medications and tests and procedures for their patients. The proposed new rule that Medicare proposed in January 2014, which we're trying to stop, mm-hmm. but the point is that new rule was preventing independent physicians who are not opted out. If someone, let's say a doctor says, okay, I've had enough of being part of Medicare, I'm just going to disenroll. Mm-hmm. So if they disenroll, or if they never enrolled, or if they just don't participate, those are the independent doctors that Medicare is trying to prevent from ordering medications. They've already prevented those types of independent doctors from ordering tests and procedures mm-hmm. for Medicare patients.
Gotcha.
So they're trying to close the door on independent physicians advocating for patients. The one loophole that still exists is if doctors have legally opted out. That's why AAPS, the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, is trying so hard to raise awareness among physicians that they have the opportunity to opt out, still serve their Medicare patients, and still order everything the patients need, but they have more freedom to do what the patients need.
Gotcha. On that note, let's take a small break.
Really important.
When we come back,
Dr. George, there are some other changes to Medicare that are really alarming, because it's not only affecting Medicare patients' access to care, it's affecting the out-of-pocket huge cost that patients will be hit with. One of them is that hospitals are increasingly classifying Medicare hospitalized patients as being under observation rather than inpatient status. Now, to help your listeners understand why that's important, I mean, the patient's in the hospital, they're in a hospital bed, they feel like they're in the hospital, they are in the hospital. It's an administrative designation, under observation versus inpatient status. And the difference is that under observation comes under Medicare Part B outpatient coverage, which has much lower reimbursements. Inpatient designation comes under Medicare Part A hospital services, which covers more of the cost. So what happens is that patients get discharged and they get home and they find out, oh my gosh, I'm being billed for thousands of dollars because the hospital's only calling me under observation and it's using the outpatient benefits, which aren't very good for hospital stay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge issue. NBC News did a whole special on that, and in the article that I wrote that you have a copy of, there's a link to that that you can put on your radio show website for people to watch the news report. They don't have to take my word for it. NBC did a news report with people talking about actual experiences where patients were hit with $25,000 in costs that they had to bear because of this administrative difference in how the hospital classified your being in the hospital.
So this is
now, that's even more important because the new Medicare rules deny payment for the hospitalization if a patient is readmitted within 30 days of discharge. And you and I as physicians both know that's really damaging to people with chronic lung disease or congestive heart failure or diabetes, where you'll often get someone stabilized in the hospital, and then they go home, they may miss some medications, and they quickly destabilize. If you get them back in the hospital, they can get turned around very quickly, stabilized, back on track, and do very well. If they don't get back in the hospital, they can die before 30 days are up. So then the catch-22 happens. If they're readmitted to the hospital under observation, they'll get hit with unexpected exorbitant hospital bills. So patients are really going to be hit hard going forward. This has not been a big problem in the past, but it is becoming a huge problem now. Just over the last few years, 2 or 3 years, the use of the term under observation has jumped 63% in hospitals across the country. It's a huge hit to patients' pocketbooks.
Well, let me stop you for a second because you said so much that I want to just distill that. We're talking about cost shifting from the hospitals to the Medicare patients. Now, the private insurance...
Absolutely. That's exactly the bottom line.
So this is different because the private insurance folks already know about this. It's called a deductible and a co-insurance. And Medicare recipients were kind of protected a bit from this. Now you're telling me
Yes. That
the people who are least able to afford any change in their bottom line financially, if they get sick, not only can they not afford it, they may lose everything they have based on a disease.
That's exactly right.
That's just unconscionable.
Exactly right. That's why people like you and I and other members of AAPS, and I encourage your listeners to go to www.aapsonline.org for more information on all of this, and go to www.patientpoweramerica.com, click on the tab America's Fabric, and there's a radio show that I did on this topic if they forget what you and I are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But patients have got to understand what's coming that is life-threatening because there are blocks to access to the medical care itself. But they've got to also understand it's a major hit to people on a fixed retirement income because it's exactly that. It is cost-shifting.
My God.
Hospitals are playing the game of designating the patients as under observation so they don't get dinged under the new rules with lower reimbursements for more inpatients and surgeries. And then on the other hand, they're shifting the cost over to the patient to have to pay when the patient is sick and in the hospital and doesn't even think or know to ask these questions.
Oh, can
that's
I ask
the diabolical aspects of it. You're sick. Well, your family's scared and worried. You're not thinking to ask all of these financial questions at going in because Medicare hasn't worked this way in the past.
Let me stop you again because this is an important point for people. How much power does a family have? What, like, can they go to their doctor when the person gets admitted and say, what are you admitting my loved one under? And if it is observation, are they able to argue? Is that something, is that an option for them? Or they're just at the mercy of what the doctor puts on that, or what the hospital mandates, I should say, that the doctor puts on that admission. Because that's what happens in the hospitals. Doctors lose their autonomy. Case managers, nurses that are designed, or their whole purpose is to make sure that the documentation is correct. And I've seen doctors be hounded to come back and change an admission order from inpatient to observation or ambulatory because the case managers looked over the chart and decided, hey, this is not in the best interest of the hospital. I don't care what you say. You have to change it. Is that something that the patients can actually have a power over?
Well, they have some power in that situation. They have one key power, and that is to choose a physician who's independent to do an independent medical opinion, choose someone who's legally opted out of Medicare so that that person can order tests and procedures the patient may need that the Medicare contracted doctor or case manager is denying because of Medicare rules. That's one option. The other option, the family members can go to the hospital ombudsman and be the squeaky wheel and say, no. If you've got my family member here in the hospital because it's serious enough to be physically inside the hospital, then you need to designate this as an inpatient admission. And the family members that complain, that speak up, that go to the hospital ombudsman are likely to get some reprieve. Now, obviously, I can't promise that, but you're right, the case managers are being hired to make money for the hospital by keeping people under observation and not the inpatient designation. So it's huge. It is huge. And you're right, patients' families are going to have to be much more active than they've ever been in the past.
I also want to give an example that I think people can really understand how horrible this really potentially is. If you have a loved one, for example, who broke a hip and had hip surgery and really needed to go to rehabilitation after they finished their hospitalization, if they're admitted under observation, they are not eligible to go to rehab. It will not be paid for by Medicare because Medicare has a guideline that the person has to be inpatient status for 48 hours before they're eligible to be sent to a rehabilitation center. So now you have tons of seniors who don't meet that criteria who are going to be sent home. There's no way that someone in their 70s or 80s should be home with a hip replacement. They need a little bit of skilled nursing, some care to get back up on their feet. And this is a system. It's not even
user friendly. Absolutely, Dr. George. I think that's an excellent example because the physical therapy after hip replacement, after knee replacement, shoulder surgery, any of the common surgeries that have been fabulous at giving older patients better quality of life and increased activity and movement and independence as they age, all of those surgeries have got to have proper physical therapy afterwards in order to get back your range of motion and movement without a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And if a patient does not have 3 nights in hospital designated inpatient, then none of those outpatient rehab services are covered under Medicare. You are absolutely correct. I just think that is an insidious, diabolical, devastating impact on our seniors when they think they have Medicare coverage for these services, and Medicare promotes coverage for those services in all their promotional materials, but then these changes in semantics to cost shift and to protect the profit line of the hospitals is going to hit patients really hard from now onward. It really started after Obamacare went into effect because of the new rules, and that began, the worst of those began starting in the fall of 2012. And we're seeing them increase. I mean, I'm just amazed at the degree to which the insurance companies, just since January, and Medicare have been denying everything under the sun for patients of mine who've been on stable on medications for years.
Are you seeing denials for medications that you have prescribed that they've no longer covered?
Yes. And now, here's something absolutely ludicrous. I have one patient who said, Medicare is no longer going to cover my estradiol. What am I going to do? Because she can't sleep and she's in pain and she can't think and her memory is terrible when she's not on her optimal level of estradiol that I've been managing for a long time. Well, so fortunately in this situation, I said to the patient, look, estradiol is a generic medication at Target and Walmart. They're usually less than $10. Don't panic. Call Target, call Walmart, see what their fee is, because if Medicare Part D isn't going to pay for it, it's an affordable medication. So she calls back a little while later and she said, thank goodness, my estradiol is only $8 a month. I'm just going to buy it.
Wow.
But my point there is patients, and to some extent doctors, I think, have been made to feel so disempowered and so helpless that they throw up their hands and say, oh, my God, my insurance isn't going to cover it, so what am I going to do? I don't have any choices. Yes, you do. You have the choice of paying cash. And you're better off, in the long run, paying cash for what you need and a doctor who advocates for you than losing your health and your quality of life because Medicare or a private insurance company denies what you need.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a better use of your money because your health is your greatest wealth. Once your health is gone, all the money in the world can't buy it back.
Well, Dr. Follett, on that note, we're going to take a small break and come back. And I want you to pick up where you left off. You're listening to Medicine
okay.
on Call.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
Spring is in the air, literally. So follow Sniffles to Atlanta Center for breathing easy. Weeds, spores, grass, pollen. Airborne allergen levels are through the roof, putting your allergies into overdrive. It's time to followsniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
End your annual ritual of taking medication to alleviate facial pressure, facial pain, congestion, and headaches by treating the problem, not the symptom. Balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for. This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day. Followsniffles.com.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Your severe sinus and nasal symptoms gone once and for all. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again. Call us at 404-591-9100. That's 404-591-9100.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Followsniffles.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I have a special guest today with me, Dr. Elizabeth Lee Villette, who is an amazing physician. She has her own independent practice, and she works with both men and women in hormonal issues, which is a major deal at this point in our country. I think people are coming in with, they're on all sorts of meds. They have depression, polycystic ovarian disease, menopause issues. And what you do is you take care of that. That's your wheelhouse. Am I correct?
Yes, that's right. I look at how all the overlooked hormone connections affect everything from brain health to your heart, your bones, your muscles, your skin and hair and eyes and sexual response and everything, these overlooked connections are so important. Let me give you an example that I just think is so illustrates the ludicrousness of government-approved guidelines. As for women, estrogen affects over 400 functions in the entire brain and body. The FDA has approved three things for use of estrogen: vaginal dryness, bone loss, and hot flashes. So what about the other 397 things that estrogen affects? That's what the government doesn't think is important. And I'll tell you categorically, my patients say those other 397 things are pretty daggone important to having a energetic quality of life and lower health risk. So that's a good example of exactly how government guidelines can limit what doctors do if they are stuck in the box of not looking at the patient but just following the guidelines and protocols. When you were talking about Medicare guidelines, you're exactly right. Medicare, for example, doesn't want me to order a CA-125 test for ovarian cancer for my patients, but I can tell you, because I'm independent, I've been able to order it, and yes, the patients pay for it, but it's not an expensive test. I mean, it's under $50 for most people, and I've picked up early ovarian cancers, and those women are still alive because I ordered the test. So do those women think $50 is worthwhile to pay for the test? Absolutely.
I think you're saying something that I want to reiterate, it because it is so important. These guidelines are so non sequitur most of the time that for the example you just gave, to give someone estrogen for those three things and then treat them with antidepressants, any anxiety medicines, high blood pressure medicines, all the medicines that are going to be used for the conditions, you know, for other issues that come up because your estrogen is out of whack. Just think of all the costs associated with not making the diagnosis, not working up the patient fully, and just following some schematic. It doesn't make any sense.
You're right, Dr. George. I have seen this for years, and I've been trying to get insurance companies to pay attention to the fact that it's actually not only better medicine and better quality of life for the patient, because you don't have the side effects of 10 different medications, but it's also lower cost. And it's just, the rigidity is just staggering. Patients come to see me, and they may be on an average of 9 or 10 or 12 different medications for every symptom in the book. Like you said, blood pressure, sleep, cholesterol, bladder, pain, anxiety, depression, headaches. They're on all kinds of medications. Once we identify the overlooked endocrine connections, and it can be ovarian, it can be thyroid, it can be insulin resistance, it can be a lot of things, it can be low vitamin D, which is actually a hormone. Once we identify all that and start putting the pieces together and get people on track, I find that I'm consistently able to lower their other medication use, get them to lower doses of antidepressants and fewer side effects, or get them off the antidepressants, get them off the sleeping pills that rob people of their memory and their quality, their energy during the day, get them off the blood pressure medicines that have a lot of side effects, maybe get them off statins, for example. It's just staggering how much we are overlooking the basic physiology of the human body for men and women. Now that we're living longer, we need to be paying attention to these endocrine aging changes that are very treatable. We do it with thyroid. Why we don't pay attention to the reproductive hormones for men and women as they get older and lose them is absolutely beyond me. It does cost less, and it's better for the patient.
I'm going to give you an answer to that. I think you just have to see who stands to gain. If the person's on a statin and a hypertension medication and an antidepressant and an anti-anxiety med, the pharmaceutical company stands to gain. Let's be frank. And these guidelines are not coming from doctors. They're coming from pharmaceutical-driven research where they get to ask the question, rig it so they get their answer, and their answer is always take something, one pill of something or more, every day for the rest of your life. That's how this thing works. It's a medical industrial complex. And what we're talking about
is, I think you're right, the FDA conflicts of interest on the expert panels that approve medications and that help to write the guidelines. I think there have been excellent studies over the years that have shown that many of the experts appointed to those FDA panels do have significant conflicts of interest with pharmaceutical consulting contracts and that sort of thing. But aside from that part of the problem, I have thought it made common sense that the insurance companies would like to find ways to reduce medication cost because it helps their profit line, but I can't even get them to pay attention when it is in their best interest to undertake a pilot program to look at more effective ways to evaluate and treat patients as they age.
I think, and I guess another answer for me would be the pharmacy benefit management companies, where the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, and the pharmacies in some instances all collude together. So they're setting the formulary. I'm sure there's some sort of money passing back and forth. That's why these formularies change. So this is all about the bottom line, and money drives this system because it's so anti-patient and anti-doctor. And
well, you know, Dr. George, I'm having a very interesting, eye-opening experience. I'm actually developing medical consulting and medical resources with networks and hospitals in Santiago, Chile. And I find it absolutely amazing to see the difference here in Santiago in hospitals, and my husband was an inpatient in one of the hospitals for a medical emergency in September, so we've lived it as patients as well as my being a medical professional and physician meeting with all of these people. The focus in Chile is still on the patient. The doctors make the medical decisions. Hospitals are very focused on patients and patient care. We didn't see a single incident of a case manager coming around hounding the doctor to change things for the benefit of the hospital or the insurance company.
Wow.
There wasn't the ageism that is creeping into hospital stays in the U.S. where, oh, well, so-and-so's just lived a good life. They're 80 now, and let's just make them comfortable. That's total hogwash. If a person has a treatable condition and is living a healthy life, they should be treated and they should have the opportunity to return home to their independent living and not have the hospital or doctors or case managers make age-based decisions that you've lived long enough, so therefore we'll just make you comfortable until you die.
I want people to go to the web and look up your article about this. It's called The Top 9 Ways Government Attacks American Seniors. And I want you to just tease out for me number 4, which basically says that the hospitals get paid to deny care for Medicare patients. Give me an example how that works. So that fewer surgeries, fewer procedures, and that's how the hospitals are now going to be able to make money.
Well, this started in the fall of 2012. Obamacare rules changed the way hospitals are paid under Medicare. They are paid more money if they do fewer surgeries. So if you couple that rule change with the fact that more doctors now are employed by hospitals and are not independent decision makers, you see how patients may not be told the full truth. If the hospital is going to make money by doing fewer surgeries, then hospital-employed doctors are more likely to get pressure from the hospital administrators to not approve surgeries for patients who might otherwise need them. For example, a knee replacement, or a hip replacement, they may just say, Well, let's give it more time. Let's do physical therapy. Let's give you more pain medicine. Of course, pain medicines for older people tend to make them more foggy-brained and more balance problems and higher risk of falling. But never mind. It'll save the hospital money. So patients may not be told unless they get an independent second opinion from a surgeon who doesn't answer to the hospital bottom line or whose job is not affected by the medical decision. Patients may never know that they actually are a very good candidate for surgery. I've been sending a lot of patients for second opinions to the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, where all of the doctors are independent. When they operate at that surgery center, they evaluate the patient medically, not economically what the government allows or what the hospital allows. And the patients have a lower cost out of pocket because it's all cash price surgeries and it's all transparently posted online. Hospitals in Santiago, for example, some of the gastric surgeries that help patients with diabetes are one-third the cost here of what they are in the U.S. And yet patients don't know that they have options. So that's the network that I'm working to build. Now, that we are in the process of building the website to describe all of this, but I think the main thing people need to know is Medicare, as we've known it, does not exist any longer. Obamacare gutted Medicare, eviscerated the budget, changed the rules, is shifting more of the cost onto patients and making it harder for patients to get the care they need. So patients need to start looking outside the U.S. They need to start getting overseas international insurance that gives them some options, and they need to start contracting privately with independent opted-out doctors. AAPS website, aapsonline.org, has information on opting out. Patients can take that information to their doctor and say, look, you have more freedom to work for your patients if you do this. States have lists of Medicare doctors that are opted out legally. They may not be up-to-date list, but they at least gives people a start. I think all of these strategies are things that patients need to do to protect themselves and give themselves options. And the other thing is patients need to do what our grandmothers told us to do. Get out and exercise, eat right, get enough sleep, take care of your health, because
I'm going to have to stop you.
You want to do everything possible to stay out of the hospital unless it's absolutely necessary.
I got to stop you there, and I actually want to have you back because we just scratched the surface. So I'm going to put all your information up on the site, and I look forward to having you back on as a guest soon. Thank you for joining
me. Wonderful, Dr. George, and just thank you for all the great work you're doing. I'm thrilled to be a partner in helping you with this. So thank you so much.
Thank you.